Brittany Gorris, welcome to Dirtbag Rich.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Your website calls you a professional dirtbag. What does that mean?
So that was something I branded myself because I am a professional rock climber. But if you look at kind of the spectrum of other professional climbers out there, most of them have a bit of a different lifestyle than me. My life is very minimalistic. I live in my van full time. I'm coming up on my 6th year vanniversary in a week or two. And I just essentially try and make my career as a professional climber sustainable while doing the least amount of other work as possible, because there's not really a whole lot of financial support in climbing. No matter, like my sponsors do their best, but it's just not really like a full-time job. And so, in order to pursue my dreams and the lifestyle I want, I live very cheaply and just try and, have minimal expenses. And thus, I sort of present myself as the least professional that is somehow getting by.
Where are you right now?
Yeah, I'm in my friend's driveway in Moab, Utah, which is one of my absolute all-time favorite places on earth.
And you are inside your van,
Correct.
your home on wheels,
Yes.
and your office.
Yeah, I work from libraries as much as I work from my van.
And what is your work? How do you make money to be the professional dirtbag and not just a mere everyday dirtbag?
So I have quite a few sources of income, but I would say that my main hustle is I work as a graphic designer, and that I work pretty part-time, but I've worked for the same company for 6 years now, since 2016, and that is completely remote. And then I also make a portion of my income just from being a professional climber. And then I also occasionally work at a gym here in Moab, very occasionally. And I also teach occasional clinics and climbing, like instructional camps. And sometimes I publish my writing, and sometimes I do public speaking, and I just essentially under my I'm a graphic designer as one side, and then the other side, everything falls under the umbrella of rock climbing that isn't my design job.
Got it. And how much money have you made using this kind of hodgepodge approach over the years? Like, where were you when you started this life financially, and where are you now?
Well, last year I actually made the most money I've made ever. But I think part of that was just because of a really generous Christmas bonus from my boss.
Hey, that counts.
Well, let's just say I make little enough that I got kicked off my health care and I now am on Medicaid, and I make enough to repair my van occasionally. It's usually between $15,000 and $20,000 a year.
And is that a number that you've built up to? Has it been like that for a while? How little were you able to live on earlier in this life?
I think I started out probably making around $11,000 a year.
And for people who hear that number and are just flabbergasted, like, how do you actually spend that money and live your life climbing all the time and traveling around? How would $11,000 work?
Well, I don't spend it. I save it. My expenses are really minimal. I usually probably, so I drive a 2003 Econoline. So I spend money on gas, but I don't spend that much money on gas because My van actually does okay. My build is pretty light. I think a lot of more modern, nicer vans are actually way worse. And I have my general bills, you know, like car insurance. And then I usually have to repair my van once or twice a year. It's always costs $1,000. And then I have food, and I try and cut down on food expenses by doing as much dumpster diving as I can. I have to buy some climbing equipment. Most of my climbing equipment I get from my sponsors, so that's not the expense that it would be for most climbers, but it is still sometimes an expense. And gosh, what else is there? That's all you need, right? Is gas, food, and climbing gear.
How about entertainment? How about going out to eat? How about traveling internationally? Just stuff like that.
Well, so I've stayed domestic for most of my time living on the road. I've actually become more invested in international travel recently, and that is definitely an expense. So I went to Australia last winter as a big trip for a couple months, and I probably dropped $2,000 on plane tickets. But once I was there, you know, I was living in a tent the entire time. We had 5 people sharing one Subaru. And the exchange rate is really good. So I didn't really spend any money that I wouldn't have spent here in the US aside from the plane ticket. So kind of like that's what my big travel looks like is, you know, I'd stay in a hostel if I had access to one, or I'd camp. And I don't really go out a whole lot. It's just, I don't really enjoy it, like going out to eat that much. I prefer home cooked food. I actually don't really care about food that much at all. I could eat oatmeal for 3 meals a day and be totally fine.
What a superpower.
I know. I quit drinking almost 2 years ago, but I did used to spend a bit more money on going out for drinks, because that was like kind of a hobby, going to breweries, and that's definitely saved me a lot of money. But I do, you know, I spend occasional money on entertainment. I might like go to the movies, or I do go out to eat, you know, maybe once a month, which maybe doesn't seem like a lot to some people, but like any time that I do at all, I kind of feel guilty about it. Like, this is an unnecessary expense.
Huh. Let's play with that. Like, guilty in what way? Where does that come from?
I grew up during my mom went through bankruptcy when I was a teenager, and I was very aware of how a lot of the money kind of had to be saved. And during that time, as I was sort of learning to manage my own money alongside that as a young adult, and you know, we said no to almost everything. It was like a huge deal for us to go skiing one weekend a year, because we just like couldn't really afford all of the stuff that goes along with it. And so it just was like, to go out to the movies or to go out to eat was treated as, you know, a treat or a reward or an indulgence, rather than just like a thing that is part of everyday life. And so as someone who is just only able to really live the life that I want by being very conscious of how I spend my money on things like that, I feel a little guilty if I go out to eat, because that isn't really treating myself to me. Like, if I were going to treat myself, I would probably like go buy clothes or something, not food. And so it doesn't really feel like I'm doing something that's worth it a lot of the time. It's usually just like, I want to spend time with friends, not I want to buy restaurant food. And so it's kind of like, I would just as much rather not go. And so it does feel, that's why I'm just like, why did I go along with this?
That guilt of like, I just dropped $50 on this meaningless experience.
Yeah. And especially like I'm paid hourly for most of the things that I do, or for like half of the things that I do. And so like, I kind of know what my time is worth. And, you know, if I like go spend $50 at a restaurant, then I'm like, well, if I only work 15 hours a week, that's a couple of those hours. And so, you know, I just like, I know what my time is worth, and I can't help but think about the money I spend in regards to, you know, how much work I have to do to get it back. Cause like, I love my job, but I don't really like the act of working enough that I want to do it more so I can spend more.
So you work about 15 hours a week?
For my graphic design job. Yes. I also consider like my, all of the time that I invest into climbing as like, to me, I would do it either way. It's what I love, but it, because it is also a source of my income. You know, the hours I spend training in a gym or trying to accomplish my goals, like that is sort of also my career. And so it's not that I'm working 15 hours a week and then I'm just playing the rest of the time. Like my, it's this gray area between the two.
I feel like a lot of us are in that gray area.
Yeah.
Tell me, like, what is so wonderful about your life that you are choosing to live in this very different way? Like, what are some, maybe some recent moments that remind you, like, this is why I'm doing this? Like a moment of like beauty or transcendence or connection, something like that.
Well, to me, it felt like when I moved into my car, because I had a car before my van that I lived in for a year, it felt like that was when my life truly started. It felt like everything that I ever did before that was just sort of a prologue. And I, in the last couple years, just this lifestyle makes me feel alive in a way that I never did, living the status quo. And I think it's because one of my, the things I value most is freedom. And I don't, stability doesn't really hold a whole lot of value to me compared to freedom. And I just have this ability to do whatever I want. Like I don't, I'm not tied down by the constraints of living in one place. And I think that that's sort of one of the core appeals that brought me to the road. But I think what kept me there and what really made me fall in love with the life that I lead is that it just, it feels like my calling. And because of that, I just really feel like I belong in the places that I go and the way that I live, because sort of the way that you spend time with people is very different. And the, and that really, because, so essentially, you know, if you, if I'm in my van and I go to Indian Creek, which is the perfect example of this, what I'm going to describe. And it, it's a rock climbing area outside of Moab, and you don't have any cell phone service and you're like kind of far from town and you're just in a campground with all of these people. And they're the first people you see when you wake up in the morning, and then you go climbing together all day and you share all these emotional moments, and then you make dinner together, and then you sit around a campfire together, and then you go to sleep, and then you wake up the next day and you do it all again. And while that's not what my life looks like every single day, it's a really like core example of the way that you build connections with people. And you have all of this common ground of being living the same lifestyle and loving the same places and the same activities. And you just like build these really, really deep, meaningful connections with people. And through that, I just found that I fit in a way that it didn't really feel like I did for a lot of my life and in a lot of places. Because not only I really love nature, I really love being outside. And so, you know, I getting to spend all of my time in places that I love that are beautiful and that inspire me really builds the sense of place. And then I have the freedom to go to any place that I want. And then I have the sense of belonging of that place then accepting me because I fit with the people there. And the thing I love uses the land, and it just all kind of works together harmoniously to reward the things that I value most.
Hmm. I've heard you quote the big wall climber, Paul Piana. He said, "It goes without saying that skill is a necessary ingredient for climbing, but good friends with the proper spirit are imperative." And I'm curious, what's the proper spirit? What brings out this sense of community and the sense of belonging that you're describing, which I feel like so many people crave and they never quite seem to get it?
I love that quote. And Paul is such a gem. He is a friend of mine now. I was so lucky to get to meet one of my heroes and for them to turn out to be exactly who I thought they'd be. But I think it's not just dirtbags. I think it's just the climbing community in general really attracts people that are like, that at least for me are just the people that I get along best with. And I think a big part of it is that the lifestyle that is built around, you know, all of the things that I do and love is relatively counterculture. And it's, you know, it maybe not so much now as it used to be as its origins, because, you know, hashtag van life kind of blew up and there's a lot of people that do it a bit more recreationally and less as a lifestyle. And so you might not actually think about it as being quite so counterculture, but if you look at the people doing it full time and really committed, and, you know, even if they're, you know, working a tech job from the road and they're making decent money and they have nice stuff and they aren't scrapping it together, they're still living like an alternative lifestyle. And I think that just that way of thinking brings together a lot of people that just didn't really fit anywhere else in life. And that common ground of just sort of, you know, being a misfit and not really having that sense of belonging anywhere else creates like one of the strongest pieces of common ground you could ask for in a community. Because, you know, like I didn't really have a lot of friends growing up, and now, you know, I have more friends than I can keep up with because it's hard to be stay in touch when you're traveling all the time. But I just meet so many people everywhere I go, and everyone that I meet is the same as me, where they're just, you know, they're not like the people that were quarterbacks on their high school football teams. They're the people that kind of looked at the world and the way that you're supposed to technically like status quo told to do this, that, or the other thing and turned away from it. And, you know, you could break that further down into any manner of personality traits, but I think at its core, it's just, it attracts a certain kind of person that we just gravitates towards others like it. And it makes it really easy to feel free to be yourself because you've already shed off all of the ways that the world tells you you're supposed to be. And then, you know, that kind of just like authenticity makes it pretty easy to like someone and to get to know someone because they're not pretending to be anything. They've already made the choice to be who they really are and who they want to be by leaving behind the status quo.
Yeah, I want to dwell on that. Maybe you can speak for yourself, but maybe also for your friends. Like, how are you not able to conform to modern society? Like, in what way are you not able to play along with the normal rules of the game?
I think the biggest thing for me is just staying put. I find for myself that I have a really hard time being in one place for more than, I found 3 months to be the limit. I just get burned out and it is really consistent. It doesn't matter where I am. It doesn't matter who I'm with, more than 2 to 3 months anywhere. And I just lose all motivation to do anything. I'm not creative. I'm not energetic. I'm not inspired. I'm just bored and a little bit bummed out and just antisocial. And so I have to move. And as soon as I switch places, I instantly feel better. And it has happened over and over and over and over again. And I just don't really understand how people get through that when they live in one place. And I think something that a fellow dirtbag once said to me really reigns true for me personally, which is that our society was kind of, the modern world was built as like a farming culture where you have to like live on the farm to raise your crops, to feed your family, to make a living. And it, that sort of established our culture as being very location based. And it, if you look at like, you know, humans before that, we were hunter gatherers and we moved around all the time. And I think there is that wildness and that like need to roam is still within people. It's, you know, why we go on vacation. And for some of us, it's just so strong that you can't ignore it. And that's like the thing that kills me about the way that modern society is structured is that, you know, there are these two different origins of human beings, and we're just conditioned and expected to not have the choice as to which one we are and which one we want to be. And that's something I have always struggled with, even when I didn't know that I was struggling with it, like when I was younger. And so that, I think that's the biggest one for me.
Tell me about your early life and growing up. You previously told me that you come from a lineage of engineers with pretty high expectations for conventional success.
I had, you know, I come from privilege, you know, there's no denying that. And I wouldn't want to, because my family has worked really hard to be quite successful. But I come from a lot of kind of two opposing schools of thought, which is like the very linear status quo, go to school, get a degree, become an engineer, make a lot of money, buy a big house, start a family. You know, that is one side of my family. And, you know, coming from that, like my dad is that, like, he worked really hard. He has a beautiful home, a wonderful life. He's so smart. You know, I have nothing but the highest respect for him. But it is like this very sort of like logical linear recipe. And it, then on the other side, my parents got divorced when I was in fifth grade, and my mom's side, is like, my mom is an artist and very much like a free thinker and the kind of person that would diverge from, you know, what is expected because she wants different things out of life. And also, so like at the same time, and she like tried to start a business and it didn't work out. And that's why we struggled financially for a while. But watching that, she went after her biggest life dream in the most committing way possible. And that it didn't work out, which is such a bummer, but it also was one of, you know, when I was young, it was the only time I'd ever seen anyone do something like that, you know, just instead of just always like having a big crazy dream to actually try and go for it. And so, you know, combining the sort of engineering track of this really expected normal way of life, contrasting with this like artistic dreamer, but like also having no money sort of life. I think all those two things combined, I'm so lucky they gave me the tools I needed to live the way I do now, you know, like to be good with money and to know what matters and to be brave enough to follow my dreams, et cetera, et cetera.
What was your mom's big dream?
She wanted to open a fiber weaving, knitting yarn store. And she's had other dreams that she's also followed. She moved to the coast, was the first person in her family to go to college, you know, a lot of really impressive things like that.
When you told your parents that you were going to try to become a professional rock climber and later that you're moving into your van, how did they respond? Were they supportive? Was there some underlying criticism or worry?
Oh, there's definitely worry. And it wasn't really that I told them anything. I left home at 17 to go to college and moved to the other side of the country. I moved to Washington. My parents are from Colorado. And so I'd already been living fully independently on my own for quite a while. And so it wasn't like I just one day dropped this huge bomb on them that I was going to go do something crazy. You know, I was already taking a lot of trips to go climbing. I would go to Europe. I would go to Mexico. It wasn't anything new that I was devoting a lot of my time to climbing. And I wasn't a professional climber yet at that point. And that was also not a thing I just decided to do. It was a thing I built up slowly over many, many years. So the wheels were sort of already in motion for that, but not, if, you know, at the time I never would have even dreamed that I would be where I am now in terms of my career as a climber. But I was simply interested in pursuing being a dirtbag. And my parents took it really well, a lot better than you'd think. Because as much as my mom just loved it. She adores my life and wants to travel more herself and loves to, you know, live through my adventures with me. And I received zero criticism ever from her. And I think my dad had maybe more concerns, but again, zero criticism. I think he just is very much like a planner and a long-term thinker. And I think he was probably thinking things like, oh, you know, like how's she going to save up for retirement and stuff like that. But he also, you know, he's done a lot of really, he was also a person that was divergent in his family. You know, he did all these crazy things when he was young too. Like he came from a religious background and he was the first one to leave the religion behind. And he moved to Colorado instead of joining the military. He became like this mountain man and climbed all the 14ers and grew out this huge mane of hair and this giant beard that everyone in the clean cut family hated. And even though he still followed the career path of the family, he was a person that also was, you know, willing to leave things behind for the sake of living the life he wanted. And so they get it. They both get it. And they both want me to be happy and they want me to do the things I love. And so, you know, if that's the intention, it's kind of a no-brainer that you would support someone's choice like that.
Yeah. That's real privilege.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I'm aware of it, and I'm grateful for it.
I'm going to ask you a few money questions.
Sure.
Do you feel empowered to live the way you do because you have access to some sort of generational wealth or expect to receive an inheritance?
No. I definitely would say that I have a lot more financial stability thanks to my family than other people. I don't have a trust fund, and I'm not living my life because I'm expecting an inheritance or anything, but, I have my own savings. I have plenty of savings because I've been saving my money my entire life, and I spend very little of it. And so I have my own ability to support myself if anything crazy were to happen, if I needed just like some, like, if I just, you know, if everything fell apart and I, you know, my health or my vehicle or, you know, the world, you know, who knows. But I also know that if for any reason that weren't the case, I could fall back on the support of my family. And, my college was paid for. I don't have any debt. There's one or two things, like I'm still on a family phone plan. I think that's the only regular expense I don't pay for myself. And while I could pay for it myself, my dad always really likes to support me by helping with van repairs and upgrades and stuff like that I want to do. And so I think that I definitely do have a lot of privilege from family, but I can also say with certainty that I would live the same life without it. Mm. I would just maybe have a few less bells and whistles.
And when you feel that concern from your dad or from someone else about retirement, about that kind of long-term financial security, how do you respond to it? What's your answer to other people? What's your answer to yourself?
Well, I think the things that actually are concerned about are more about safety, is not for me, but for my family. I think, you know, they worry just that I'm being safe because I spend most of my time doing a pretty adventurous physical sport that has a lot of uncontrollable elements to it. So I think they worry more about safety in terms of that, but because they know that I'm good with money and that I've been working towards it. And like, I do save, you know, I invest, I do have like savings for retirement. And so it's not a thing I worry about. And I don't know that my parents worry about it that much either for me anymore. You know, maybe they, maybe it was like a thought at first, but I've proven that I can do just fine living this life, and that I build my career more and more over the years. And as time goes on, I am able to support myself better and better. And so, you know, I couldn't say right now that I have like a 5-year plan or a 25-year plan or anything like that, but I trust that I will get wherever I need to go just because that has been what's happened thus far, is that, you know, I've put in the work and I've gotten the results, and that seems to be the whole recipe.
That's the security.
Yeah.
Where did you learn your financial prowess? Where do you get your money management skills? Was it just, did it come baked in?
No, I think a lot of it was just going through bankruptcy as a kid was, you know, I learned both that you don't need money to be happy and also how to save money. You know, I would go grocery shopping with my mom and we would have an exact budget of how much we could spend, and we would choose what we would want because based on that. And, you know, we would say like, oh, if you get this thing, you can't get the other thing. You know, oh, you can't buy brand name stuff. You got to buy this stuff off the bottom shelf. That's like the cheap Kroger knockoff. You know, we would know how much that one weekend of skiing a year needed to be celebrated and enjoyed because we weren't going to get to go again. So I think like that both taught me how to save money, how not to spend it, and also how little you actually need.
What do you see in your climbing friends who do come from more money, who came from a default level of higher spending? How successful are they at being long-term climbers who have a lot of time wealth? Do they find their own way, or do you see different struggles?
Everybody kind of makes it work in different ways, which is very cool. And you get to see a lot of creativity in the ways that people make themselves successful. I think the one thing that I see that is when people do have the higher paying jobs that they work remotely from, those tech jobs that are more of a career sort of thing, they do have a lot less time, and they have a lot more like specific times that they have to work, times they have to be in service, resource needs to make that happen, whether it's power or sunlight to get solar or internet. And they just have like a general higher level of stress and disappointment that they have to miss days out when they have to be somewhere specific. But then they probably have nicer vans and, you know, maybe they've got Starlink. So it is interesting. And one thing I've also seen is that the people that are working more career type jobs while living on the road to support themselves, at the moment, there are a lot of times when I see them thinking the grass is always greener and being bummed that they're working so much. But then I also see the opposite with the people that do seasonal work or just pick up jobs here and there, but that the jobs aren't ever leading anywhere. Eventually, you know, I've seen people kind of burn out on traveling because they just get tired of like working these shitty jobs and not having any money, and just kind of they start to crave more purpose, I think. And for me, purpose comes from climbing because that is also a career thing for me. And it's, you know, it satisfies all these needs of direction and accomplishing goals and growing as a person and all of that. But for people who the climbing is maybe was the foundation of why they're a dirtbag, it isn't the same. And after a while, the kind of wake up every day and do whatever you want, lackadaisical thing can not be enough anymore. And I've seen a lot of people going back to school in their 30s and making these career changes. And, you know, those still are based around wanting to support an alternative lifestyle. Like, you know, a lot of people go into nursing so that they could do travel nursing or anything that like enables travel. But I've seen a lot of people that kind of are like revisiting their career path later in life as they realize that they want to kind of merge the life they've been living with something that's a bit more sustainable.
So the work that you do, which is not climbing related, the graphic design, leading clinics, you told me that you work with a Seattle nonprofit doing STEM summer camps for young women. How much purpose does that give you? Is it more of a means to an end to allow you to keep doing the climbing thing? Or is it purposeful in itself?
It's definitely purposeful in itself. I work for the coolest company. It's called Girls Rock Math, and they do STEM-based summer camps for girls in elementary school meant to empower girls at the age when it proves that women internalize the construct that math is for boys and art is for girls, and lose confidence in math and science. And so it's meant to make math and other STEM empowering, fun, and interesting. And so it to eventually, you know, lessen the STEM gap. And we provide them with like female role models in math and science and teach them about the gender gap and all of these things. So, but all through like the lens of things that girls that age are interested in. There's like a ton of different themes, everything from like the ocean to spies to fashion to crafts to, you know, all of this, but through like a mathematical lens, and all of these skills that they're not going to learn until later in school. Just concepts like, you know, there's an outdoor camp where they learn about the Fibonacci sequence, and then they go like find all of these things in nature that have it, stuff like that. But so because this organization is so powerful and does such amazing things for the world, even on days when I don't feel like working, my work has so much meaning. And then like, but in this incredible organization, I get to do something I'm really passionate about, which is make art. I'm a graphic designer. Like, it's the coolest thing. I just get to draw for my job and create things. And that is like a thing I need an outlet for anyway. I need to scratch the creative itch. And if I weren't doing my job, I would be making art some other way. And so it's really cool that I get to use that skill and fulfill that need and have it give something back to the world. So yeah, the answer is yes. It's very meaningful to me.
All right. Well, let's flip it upside down. Tell me how your life is not currently working. Like, in what way might it feel unsustainable, or something is like severely missing? Cause there's a lot of pretty stuff that we're talking about, but there must be these dark days too.
I think the one thing that's really hard to find and to sustain on the road is romantic relationships. There's, you know, in a lot of ways, it's really easy to meet people, but it's also really hard to build anything long term because everyone is so independent and so transient that either you are spending all of your time together, which is really problematic. You know, you park next to each other, you live in the same van, you're sharing this like tiny space. And that inevitably always blows up. Or, you know, you're spending really long periods of time doing long distance. If you're someone's got to go work, or you don't have the same places you want to be, or you just end up in a lot of kind of situational short-term things, or you just don't really pursue it at all. And, you know, everybody takes a different approach. And sometimes people make it work and you see things really awesome come out of meeting partners on the road. But that's a thing that I've always had a really hard time with. And honestly, I can't say I had an easier time of it when I lived in one place, so it doesn't feel that different. But it is a thing that has some inherent major struggles with living on the road. And I would say the other answer to that question would be, and I think you maybe had another question about like concerns, but and things I worry about on the road, and that would be health. And like, I live a lifestyle that definitely presents a strong possibility of injury. And if I were to be in a situation where, like, say I broke my leg and I couldn't drive, that would be like a huge issue. Or say I like had to have like a friend of mine who used to be a dirtbag, but now he lives in a house, broke his collarbone last year mountain biking and couldn't do anything for months. And even when COVID hit, and it was really ostracizing to like be anywhere that your license plate didn't look like you were a resident, because people were worried about their health, just like health as an umbrella topic, but with more, I think more specifically with a focus on like, if I were to get really sick or really injured, being in a van is not really a great place to be for that. Mm-hmm. And that it's not a thing I worry about a whole ton, just because I have gotten by on a lot of luck and I've had a lot of injuries, but while I've been on the road, none of them have required the sort of stability to recover from that I have. Like, I've always had what I needed, but that's definitely a thing that maybe would present some really tough situations were it to happen.
And yeah, extreme injury or sickness is tough for anyone. Is your emergency ripcord like going to stay with friends or family in someone's spare room? Do you have a plan for that?
Nope, I don't have a plan, but it would probably be something like that. You know, and that's again where a bit of like the privilege I do have comes into play, because I could very easily go stay with either of my parents. And I also have a lot of friends I could go stay with. And so I don't feel like I would ever be in a situation where I'd be screwed. It would more be that I would end up in a situation where I'd be very unhappy because I don't like staying at my parents' house for a long period of time. Mm-hmm.
And the mental health concern might be greater.
Yeah. You know, it's not a situation where I'd be like, oh, I just don't know what I'd do. It'd be like, yeah, I know what I'd do, but I wouldn't like it.
Just to stick on the health topic for a second, do you feel like all the time that you get to spend outdoors using your body, stretching, moving, climbing, swimming, being in sunlight, do you feel like that is a good health insurance policy just by itself? Do you, if you compare yourself to other people your age and their health challenges, how much of it do you feel comes from lifestyle, comes from being inside, sitting a lot, not being able to do the stuff that you get to do?
Well, as far as mental health goes, I really can only speak for myself. I would hate to presume to know what's going on in anyone else's head. But I also, you know, I have a college degree in recreation and leisure. And so I do know a little bit about how the general outdoors and recreation specifically has a strong benefit mentally. And I can certainly say that it has a direct correlation with my mental health. I think you could make some generalized statements about the healing effects of nature. And I think that is certainly, you know, when I said earlier that it felt like my life began when I started living on the road, that was certainly a part of it, was that just in my years, pretty much all of my years living in, I lived in Seattle and I lived in Bellingham before that. And I think it was the worst in Seattle. I really struggled with anxiety, and it's so much better when I live on the road and I'm outside all the time. And when I was living in the concrete jungle, it was really bad for a while. And it wasn't based off of anything except just this like general unease about life. And, you know, I just like felt anxious, not about anything in particular. I just like felt this just need to make changes, that just things weren't right. And then I had to fix them and I didn't know how. And I don't really ever feel that way anymore. And I certainly, you know, I still like, you know, like right now I'm in my friend's driveway. I'm not out in some beautiful campground, although her driveway is pretty beautiful. but you know, I just last weekend I saw the brightest shooting star of my life while out at a desert party out in the middle of nowhere. And there's just so many things like that where you wake up and you open your door and the first thing you see is this backdrop of of cliffs and mountains and lakes and the ocean. And it feels like you're living inside of a postcard. And, you know, how could you ever deny that that is not going to be brighter than waking up under fluorescent lights and stepping outside onto like a busy sidewalk and then sitting in traffic for an hour? Like, you know, no one on earth would make the argument that one of those is probably a little more conducive to good mental health than the other.
I was actually thinking of physical health when I asked that question, but I agree with everything you just said.
Oh, physical health. I mean, I exercise a lot. I'm a professional athlete. I think physical health is like pretty paramount to me feeling like I'm doing the right stuff in life.
Yeah. What were some worries that you had in the beginning of this journey, like in your early 20s, perhaps, that you just don't have anymore? Was there anything you really obsessed over or had anxiety about? And then once you actually got exposed to it, you realized, oh, this is extremely manageable.
I can think of a couple things. I remember being really intimidated by doing long drives by myself when I first started living on the road. And I'd only ever done road trips with friends where we had, you know, a couple people to share the drive. And I think that sort of reflects also a greater trend that I used to worry about ending up alone in general, just going somewhere and not knowing anybody or being somewhere and everyone I know packing up and moving on and me not going to the same places and having to start over and having to make new friends everywhere I went. And that sort of those just like general times when you would find yourself alone, they sort of, because a lot of times they would appear open-ended, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go somewhere and like, how long is it going to be before I make friends again? Like, I don't have an answer to that. I could make friends my first day somewhere, or I could struggle for a little while and end up spending a lot of time alone. And that was definitely a concern because the social aspect of life is like an element of stability, and that, you know, being unpredictable is a thing that I would stress out over, especially when I was still building confidence in my own social skills and my ability to make friends, having come from a background of not having all that many when I was young. And now I know people everywhere I go. And if I don't, I love the process of meeting new people. And I also have learned to really relish in my alone time and cherish the times when I don't have people around, because I have people around a lot. And so I've both found acceptance and peace in the times when I am on my own, and I no longer worry about where I'm going and who's going to be there, because I just trust that it's going to be fine. And then I would say that the other, on like a, in a totally different topic, the other thing that I used to worry about, would be car trouble and being able to deal with it if it happens. You know, I still worry about it. I still stress out about it. Just like the idea of breaking down somewhere where it's very difficult to get what you need to get back on the road. It's happened to me a handful of times. Like, things have gotten, you know, I've got like really, really stuck in the sand, like completely alone, really far away from cell service, stuff like that. Or like, you know, breaking down on a mountain pass in the middle of the night, or with no cell phone service, just, you know, stuff like that.
And how did you get out of those situations?
You know, it's always different, but just asking for help usually. And I think like the more times I've dealt with unpredictable car situations, the more I've started to believe in the things I try and convince myself that, you know, you can handle it no matter what happens. Because, like, of course you can. You're never going to, like, you'll figure it out. And I believe that more than I used to, that just that I have, you know, I may not like know the answer, but I have the skills to find the answer if I end up in those, just any sort of unpredictable situation like that.
So last question, Brittany, what is coming up next? What's on the radar? What are you excited for?
Well, so I currently am doing a thing that I've spent pretty much my entire year building up towards. So I'm really excited to be in the moment right now, to be where I am. I'm in one of my favorite places, going after something that's been my biggest dream for a really long time. And I've worked really hard to come back from an injury and to be here now. So if you'd asked me any time in the last year, pretty much what I was looking forward to, I would say this. So right now I'm just looking forward to enjoying the present. And, you know, beyond that is really hard to say because it depends on how this fall goes. But I'm also, I made a commitment to myself to leave the United States during the winter, every year. And that was because the winter on the road in the US is a bit of a bummer compared to if you're able to go somewhere else, just because, you know, the sun goes down at 4 p.m. and it's cold and it's dark and the weather sucks and there's only so many places that are good to be. And I've already been to all of them. You know, like, a great example is Bishop, California, which is a climbing destination in the Sierra. And I have been going there for, like, oh my God, like 14 years now, since, like, long before I lived on the road. And it's kind of like the place. Everyone's like, just go to Bishop. And, like, I have been to Bishop and I really thrive off of going to new places. And so I made a bit of a commitment to myself to travel internationally, because I've spent so much time exploring the US and so little exploring the big wide world, and the winter is the perfect time to do it. So I'm really looking forward to continuing to chase good weather to new places and experience new things, and then return back to more familiar things and enjoy those as well.
Wonderful. And if anyone wants to follow this journey or read your writing, which is excellent, how do they do that?
I'm most active on Instagram at GorisB. GORISB. And that is where I then link to all other places that I appear. My website is brittanygoris.com, and it's more of a blog than a website, but it also has links to, like, every podcast I've ever been on or video I've ever been in, and talks a bit about my climbing accomplishments and can link you to my sponsors and all that. And you can read my writing. And, then my Instagram is, like, where I tell, like, shorter stories about my life and my climbing. I share my art. I, you know, share links to things I think are funny or cute or important or all that. And then, yeah, if anyone ever needs to contact me, those avenues are pretty easy ways to get a hold of me or to just follow in my journey.
Brittany Goris, thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.